Once again, we'd like to turn to the book of Genesis, chapter 45. That's where we were this morning. I'd like to read verses 9 through verse 28. Genesis 45, verses 9 through the end of the chapter. "Haste ye," this is Joseph speaking, "and go to my father, and say unto him, Thus saith thy son Joseph, God hath made me Lord of all Egypt. Come down unto me, tarry not. And thou shalt dwell in the land of Goshen, and thou shalt be near unto me, thou and thy children's children, and thy flocks and thy herds, and all that thou hast. And there," that is in Goshen, "will I nourish thee, for yet there are 5 years of famine, lest thou and thy household and all that thou hast come to poverty. Behold, your eyes see, and the eyes of my brother Benjamin, that it is my mouth that speaketh unto you. And you shall tell my father of all my glory in Egypt, and of all that ye have seen, and ye shall haste and bring down my father hither. And he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept upon his neck. Moreover, he kissed all his brethren and wept upon them, and after that his brethren talked with him. And the fame thereof was heard in Pharaoh's house, saying, Joseph's brethren are come. And it pleased Pharaoh well and his servants. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, Say unto thy brethren, This do ye, lade your beasts, go, get you into the land of Canaan, and take your father and your households, and come unto me, and I will give you the good of the land of Egypt, and you shall eat of the fat of the land. Now thou art commanded, this do ye, take you wagons out of the land of Egypt for your little ones, and your wives, and bring your father, and come. Also regard not your stuff, for the good of all the land of Egypt is yours. And the children of Israel did so. And Joseph gave them wagons according to the commandment of Pharaoh, and gave them provision for the way. To all of them he gave each man changes of raiment, but to Benjamin he gave 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of raiment. And to his father he sent after this manner, 10 asses laden with good things of Egypt, 10 she-asses laden with corn and bread and meat for his father by the way. So he sent his brethren away, and they departed. And he said unto them, See that ye fall not out by the way. And they went up out of Egypt, and came into the land of Canaan unto Jacob their father, and told him, saying, Joseph is yet alive, and he is governor over all the land of Egypt. And Jacob's heart fainted, for he believed them not. And they told him all the words of Joseph, which he had said unto them. And when he saw the wagons which Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of Jacob the father revived. And Israel," that's Jacob, "and Israel said, It is enough. Joseph, my son, is yet alive. I will go and see him before I die." Again, 22 years prior to what we read here in Genesis 45, Joseph was sold into slavery by his brothers because they hated and envied him. This was due to the fact that Jacob, their father, showed much favoritism to Joseph, and it was due to the fact that Joseph had 2 dreams. That he would reign over his brothers, or that his brothers would bow to him. And this all happened again back in Genesis 37 when Joseph was 17 years old. Through the workings of God, Joseph is brought to Egypt. In chapter 41, at the age of 30, he stands before Pharaoh. And he is exalted to a position of great authority. From that time of exaltation to authority, there were 7 years when the land of Egypt brought forth an abundance. Well, we read there in Genesis 41 and verse 53, and the 7 years of plenteousness that was in the land of Egypt was ended. Following that, we read, and the 7 years of dearth began. So 7 years of plenty had passed. 7 years of famine had now begun. And the result was that there was no bread in the land of Egypt, and all the land of Egypt was famished. The Egyptians would come to Pharaoh crying for bread. And we see there in Genesis 41, verse 55, he would say unto them, "Go unto Joseph. What he saith to you, do." You go to Joseph. It's up to Joseph how he distributes the grain, how he distributes the bread. Whatever Joseph says, that you must do. We read in verse 56 of chapter 41, and the famine was over all the face of the earth. So it began to spread beyond Egypt. In verse 57, we see that all countries began to come into Egypt. And they would come to Joseph. And the reason was to buy corn. Now Jacob, the father of Joseph, and his sons, which would be, of course, the brothers of Joseph, and their families would begin to feel the effects of this famine. They lived down in Canaan. And Jacob, by the ruling providence of God, heard that there's grain in Egypt, there's corn in Egypt. So he sends his sons, with the exception of Benjamin, his youngest son, which was now his favorite. He sends his sons to buy grain. They appear before Joseph, their brother, without knowing that it is Joseph. And Joseph, of course, fills their sacks with grain, and they return to Canaan. And they and their families live off the grain received. But then we come to Genesis 43, and the supply of grain is nearly gone again. So Jacob sends his sons back to Egypt. And they once again appear before Joseph. And it was during this second trip, this second appearance before Joseph, that Joseph revealed himself to his brothers. We see that there in Genesis 45 in verse 1. We are told in verse 6 of chapter 45 that it is now the second year of the famine. So it's been 22 years. 22 years and since Joseph was sold into slavery by his brothers. 22 years later, Joseph is reconciled to his brothers. It's been 22 years since Joseph has seen his father, Jacob. 22 years since Jacob has seen Joseph. Joseph instructs his brothers to return to Canaan. And he says, "Bring my father. Bring Jacob. Bring your families." There's a total of 70 people as you read further on in Genesis. And he says, "You bring them. And I promise that I will take care of them." We see that in verses 9 through 11. We see it in verse 13 as well. Then in verses 21 through 23, Joseph gives them abundantly provisions. He loads down the mules with provisions for the way to Canaan, and for the way from Canaan back to Egypt. So there they are with all of these provisions and wagons that would transport Jacob and their families. And we read in verse 24, "So he sent his brethren away, and they departed. And then in verse 25, and they went up out of Egypt and came into the land of Canaan unto Jacob, their father. It is this arrival into Canaan and the effect that it had upon Jacob that we want to consider in this message. We'll draw the central thought of the message from verse 27, where we read concerning Jacob. When he saw the wagons which Joseph had sent to carry him, the wagons that Joseph sent to carry him. Again, Joseph is a type of Jesus Christ, and we view him as Christ in this message. I want to speak tonight concerning the Lord's wagons. Joseph sent wagons to carry Jacob to himself. First of all, consider the person of Jacob, Jacob's condition at this time, the circumstances in which Jacob found himself in at this time. Jacob, you and I have a difficult time identifying with Joseph. We don't have too hard of a time identifying with Jacob. Jacob, his life was basically marked by unbelief. He was a man who, for the most part, was very, very slow to believe God. As a result, we see Jacob scheming. We see him conniving. And he's always planning, always making plans. As you look at Jacob, his life is one of constant effort. He's always looking for an advantage. He's always seeking to exercise his own will, independent of God. Jacob, for the most part, is a very impatient man. He was, again, constantly putting forth effort, constantly taking matters into his own hands, constantly trying to fix things, constantly trying to work things out according to his own ideas, independent of God. And even when Jacob did show glimpses of faith, it wouldn't be long, and you find him again scheming and planning, taking matters into his own hands, trying to fix things, trying to work things out for God. You see, Jacob was a man who needed to see what he thought was results. Jacob needed this, as many do today. The lesson of Jacob's life is really be patient and wait upon God, because Jacob was anything but patient. Again, Jacob was very slow, very reluctant to believe the Lord. He was really reluctant to believe anything good, but he was always very quick to believe bad things. And he was very, very quick to think the worst. Back in Genesis 32, if we turn there, you remember when Jacob heard that Esau, whom Jacob had cheated out of the birthright because he wouldn't wait, he didn't have to do that. The birthright, he was going to get the birthright if he just waited God's time. It would have been a lot easier. But back in Genesis 32, when Jacob heard that Esau was headed in his direction with 400 men, Jacob immediately assumed, because of his own guilt, that Esau was coming to kill him. This caused great fear in Jacob. And Jacob immediately began to make plans based upon his assumption. Jacob immediately began to act based upon his assumption. And in verse 7, in verse 8 of chapter 32, then Jacob was greatly afraid. Again, he's made this assumption, Esau's coming to kill me, and distressed. Based upon this assumption, he began to divide the people that was with him. All unnecessary because his assumption was wrong. And the flocks and the herds and the camels into two bands. And said, if Esau come to the one company and smite it, then the other company which is left shall escape. After that, Jacob prayed. He planned, he schemed, based upon an assumption. And then in verses 9 through 11, he prayed. But then, after he prayed, you say, well, that's good. Jacob prayed. Yes, but right after he prayed, there he is again, trying to work things out. There he is again, trying to fix things. There he is again, trying to work all the angles by sending his servants ahead with a gift for Esau. He said, I will appease Esau. And he sent a gift of 220 goats, 220 sheep, 30 camels, 40 cows, 10 bulls, 30 donkeys. This was all to appease Esau. Jacob was trying to think his way through what he thought was a problem. But what he thought was a problem was not a problem. So you see, Jacob acted upon a wrong conclusion, acted upon a false assumption, rather than have faith in God. So all of this, all the planning, and all the gifts was a waste of time. And it was all a wasted effort. Why? Because Esau didn't need to be appeased. Esau wasn't coming to kill Jacob. That's not why he was coming. Notice, if we advance ahead to Genesis 37. We read these verses this morning. In verse 31, concerning the brothers of Joseph, they took Joseph's coat and killed a kid of the goats, and dipped the coat in the blood, and they sent the coat of many colors, and they brought it to their father, and said, this have we found, know now whether it be thy son's coat or no. And he knew it, and he said, it is my son's coat. And then he jumped to a conclusion. You say, well, it's a logical conclusion. Well, it was wrong. So if your logic proves to be wrong, that's not much logic. And he knew it, and he said, it is my son's coat, an evil beast hath devoured him. Joseph is without a doubt rent in pieces. Joseph has been torn to pieces by a wild animal. And for the next 22 years, Joseph lived his life believing that. But it was false. It was false. When Jacob first sent his sons into Egypt to buy grain, he kept Benjamin home. Why? Because he knew. He just knew something bad would happen to Benjamin. So he made these plans. I'll keep Benjamin at home. Jacob was very slow to believe God. And as a result, Jacob was a worrywart. I'll keep Benjamin at home because I just know something's going to happen if I don't. After his sons returned home from their first trip to Egypt without Simeon, Jacob immediately assumed in chapter 42 and verse 36 that Simeon was dead. I mean, that's just the conclusion
that Jacob came to. Because he was slow to believe God, he was very quick to believe the worst. We see it with Esau. We see it when they brought the coat of Joseph to Jacob. And we see it here in chapter 42. Simeon is dead. He was very quick to believe the worst. Jacob seeing things only from a human perspective. There in Genesis 42 and verse 36, he began to cast blame. That's what people do when they see things only from a human perspective. When you see it only from a human perspective, it's got to be someone's fault. It's not mine. I know one thing, it's not my fault, but it is somebody's, and I'm going to find out who. That's what happens when you look at things strictly from a human perspective. And this was Jacob. He says, "Ye have bereaved me of my children." He cast blame on his own sons. Seeing things only from a human perspective, he was unable, of course, to see God's hand. And unable to see God's hand, he began to be filled with self-pity. Chapter 42, verse 36, he said, "All these things are against me. Nothing goes right for me. Everything's going wrong. Everything is against me." He failed to see the hand of God. This is all the result of unbelief. Really, if you turn to Genesis 47, what Jacob said to Pharaoh when Jacob finally arrived in Egypt is very revealing of Jacob's attitude, very revealing of Jacob's life, very revealing the way that Jacob saw things. Genesis 47 and verse 9, "And Jacob said unto Pharaoh, the days of the years of my pilgrimage are 130. So Jacob is 130 years old when he comes to Egypt. "Few and evil have the days," and the word evil there is difficult, hard, wearisome. "Few and evil have the days of the years of my life been." And then notice what he says. "And have not attained unto the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their pilgrimage." He is saying, "Pharaoh, I've had a short life." Now, nowadays, 130 years is anything but a short life. And he says, "All my life has been difficult. And I haven't been blessed like my fathers. I haven't had as good as the rest of my family. They've had it better than me. Everybody's got it better than me." Again, this is a result of unbelief. Jacob, like many, was gloom personified. I mean, if you look at Jacob, he is a picture of gloom. Many of God's people, sad to say, are the same. As you view Jacob's life, it was one of weariness that he brought on himself because of his own unbelief. One of frustration that he brought on to himself. It was one of discouragement, restlessness, and misery. His life was marked by fear. His life was marked with despair. And it's all the result of unbelief. It is the result of seeking to exercise his own will independent of God. It is the result of always trying to work things out, always trying to fix things, always trying to work all the angles, always jumping to the wrong conclusion. And when we come to our text here in Genesis 45, the last 2 years of Jacob's life has been lived in famine. And for the last 22 years, Jacob has lived his life based upon a false assumption. Joseph is dead. Joseph has been torn to pieces by a wild animal. I imagine that Jacob went to bed many nights, picturing in his mind his son being torn to pieces by wild animals. It never happened. It never happened. But it was real to Jacob, because he had jumped to that conclusion. Because he was a man, he was a pessimist. I mean, Jacob is a pessimist. He saw the worst in everything. We see in our text that Jacob's sons arrive in Canaan. We read in verse 25 concerning Jacob's sons. They came into the land of Canaan unto Jacob, their father. They have returned from their second trip to Egypt. And they have returned with fresh supplies. But they didn't just return with fresh supplies. As we saw this morning, they had been in the presence of Joseph. And Joseph had revealed himself to them. And they had personally experienced the love of Joseph. And I'm sure on the trip home to Canaan, their hearts are overflowing with joy. And they can't wait to get to Canaan and tell Dad that Joseph is alive. They can't wait. And they finally arrive at home. In verse 26, and told him, saying, Joseph is yet alive. I picture them coming down the road, getting close to the house, and they get off the wagons, and they're all saying at once, Joseph is alive! Joseph is alive! He's alive! He's alive! We saw him! They're bursting with joy. What wonderful news. Joseph is alive. And they went on to say, and he is governor over all the land of Egypt. That is, Joseph is not only alive, he has authority. He's been put in charge of all the granaries. He's alive. He's exalted. And he has what a starving world needs. Dad, Joseph is alive. And notice the result. And Jacob's heart fainted. Not for joy. The reason, for he believed them not. He believed them not. Had they come and said, Dad, Benjamin has been murdered, he would have believed them. He would have believed any bad news that they had brought to him that day, because that was Jacob. But this news, Joseph is alive and he's governor over all the land of Egypt. Jacob fainted in his heart because he believed not. But they continued with great excitement to tell what they had experienced with Joseph. Notice verse 27. And they told him all the words of Joseph, which he had said unto them. Told of how Joseph, they told of Joseph's position of power. They told of Joseph's glory. They told Jacob of Joseph's invitation, come down unto me. In verse 9, he said, go to my father, say unto him, come down unto me. They told Jacob of all the promises of Joseph. Verse 10, thou shalt dwell in the land of Goshen, and thou shalt be near unto me, and there will I nourish thee. And when Jacob heard these things in verse 27, we then read, and when he saw the wagons, he didn't send his sons with wagons. These weren't his wagons. When he saw the wagons which Joseph had sent, to carry him, which Joseph had sent to carry him. The spirit of Jacob, their father, revived. Jacob experiences something that he hasn't experienced in at least 22 years. Longer than that. He now believes, having seen the wagons, Jacob believes Joseph is alive. He believes that he is the governor over all the land of Egypt, and that Joseph, in love, has made provision for Jacob and his family. And Joseph, in love, they told Jacob, he wants you to come to him. He wants you to come. And Jacob saw the wagons that Joseph had sent to carry Jacob to himself. And when he saw that, he's revived. For 22 years, he has lived a life based upon that which simply was not true. He's lived a life of great turmoil. Not seeing your son ever again and only imagining what happened. The turmoil that Jacob put himself through. The difficulty that Jacob brought into his life. For 22 years, there's been no communion with Joseph. For 22 years, there's been no fellowship with Joseph. But now he hears Joseph is alive. And he is governor. And not only that, he desires you to be near him. Dad, he wants you to come down to him. He wants you to live by him. He wants to nourish you. And he has sent all of these provisions. And he has sent all of these wagons to transport you to himself. And that's why when Jacob saw the wagons, his spirit revived. For 22 years, Jacob has lived a life that has basically been paralyzed by his own unbelief. He's lived a life that has been crippled and suffocated. But now the spirit of Jacob revived. That is, he heard the story. He heard the news. He saw the wagons. And there was a stirring within him. There was an awakening. There was a spiritual refreshing and renewing. And we say that in chapter 47, in verse 28, that Jacob arrives in Egypt with his family. In verse 28, and Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. So the whole age of Jacob was 147 years. May I say that I believe that was the best 17 years of Jacob's life. He lived near Joseph for the remaining days of his life. And we want to close by making application to ourselves. Jacob lived a very wearisome life. Jacob lived a very frustrating, discouraging, restless, and joyless life. You and I do not have to live lives that are weary. We don't have to live lives that are frustrating and discouraging and restless and joyless. And here's why. our Joseph is alive. And he rules over all. And it gets better. And just as Joseph desired Jacob to come near, our Joseph, Jesus, desires us to be near to him. He's alive. He is in a position of authority. And he desires us to live near to him. And just as Joseph invited Jacob to come, so our Joseph, Jesus, invites us to come near. But it gets better. He not only invites us to come near, he makes provision so that we can. He makes provision so that we can. You know how frustrating it would be if the Lord only invited us and that did not make provision? But he invites and he makes provision for us to come near to him. He makes provision for us to be with him. How does he do that? Same way that Joseph did with Jacob. He sends the means of transport. When Joseph saw the wagons, or when Jacob saw the wagons that Joseph had sent, we need to see the wagons. I'm not talking about literal wagons, but we need to see the wagons that God sends our way every day. Wagons sent. Wagons sent by our Joseph. Wagons sent right where we are by our Joseph to transport us to him. What a wonderful day it was when the sons arrived home and spoke those words, Joseph is alive. And he's governor over all the land of Egypt. And oh, how wonderful it was when Jacob saw the wagons which Joseph had sent to carry him. The result was the spirit of Jacob revived. I believe that every day, no matter what I hear on Fox News, every day, the news is still this. Jesus is alive, and he is ruler over all. That is the news we need to hear every day. Not only do we need to hear that news, every single day, he sends his wagons to where I am to transport me to himself. We just don't recognize him. He sends the wagons every day, but we fail to recognize the wagons. Think about some of the wagons that the Lord sends. Why does he send these wagons? To carry us to him. To transport us to him. To bring us closer to him. The Word of God is a wagon. It's a wagon. It's a wagon that will transport me closer to Joseph. Every day is this wagon. And how many times God's people walk by it, pay no attention to it, ignore it, neglect it. It's a wagon sent by God to transport us to himself. Every time the Word of God is preached in truth, that's a wagon that God has sent. Oh, pay attention to the preaching of God's Word. It's a wagon. It'll transport you into the presence of Joseph. Don't take lightly the preaching of God's Word. Again, these wagons come every day. But many times we don't recognize them. Circumstances are wagons that God uses. We need to view our circumstances as the wagons that God uses to transport us to Himself. I mean, you think about the circumstances of Joseph, how God worked everything out. And our circumstances, whether they be joyous or sad, we need to view them as wagons sent by our Joseph. Something bad happens that you and I think are bad. We need to see that as a wagon. God has sent this in my life to bring me closer to Him. And that if you can see it as a wagon, it'll change your life. You'll live your life revived. If you can just see your circumstances as a wagon. Health, sickness, these are wagons. Perhaps we fall ill tonight. Very ill, deathly ill. You say, oh, this is terrible. Depends how you look at it. If you see it as a wagon to draw your heart closer to God, it's not so terrible. That's a wonderful thing. Oh, we need to learn to view things correctly. We've all got too much Jacob in us. Trials. We can feel sorry for ourselves. We can moan and groan. Or we can look at our trials as these are wagons sent by Joseph. This is a wagon that He has sent to draw me closer to the Lord. Difficulties, same thing. They're like wagons. Our needs, perhaps the Lord brings us to a place of great need. We're always needy, but most of the time we don't realize it. But perhaps the Lord brings us to a place where we realize we've got great need, whether it's financial or whatever. Those are wagons. Those are wagons. Anything that will cause you to pray, that's a wagon to bring you closer to the Lord. Wagon sent right where we are to transport us to the Lord. I'm so glad that the Lord doesn't just say to me, come, but He provides the means where I can come. These wagons are sent out of grace. They're the grace of God. They're the mercy and the long-suffering of the Lord. Why did Joseph send these wagons to Jacob and his family? Well, there's a lot of reasons. One, he wanted to see Jacob. He wanted Jacob to be near him. But the main reason was he loved Jacob. He loved his dad. And the main reason that God sends wagons our way is out of love. Out of love to us. He says, come. Notice in Genesis 45, verse 4, come near to me. That's Joseph speaking to his brothers. Verse 9, he's speaking to his brothers, but of his father and them. He says, come down unto me. Come down to me. Come. Verse 18, take your father and your households and come unto me. Verse 19, bring your father and come. All through this chapter, we see Joseph saying, come. And if you listen every day, you will hear Jesus say, come. Come to me. Just come to me. When you're trying to figure everything out, when you're trying to fix everything, when you're worrying yourself to death, listen. Just settle down a while and listen. And hear him say, come. I am Jesus. Come. Open your eyes and look around, and you will see that he not only has given you the invitation to come, but he's provided a way to carry you to him. We have a wonderful Lord. It's grace abundant that he would even invite us into his presence. But oh, what goodness that he would provide the means to carry us to him. And sometimes you and I are so stubborn because we've got a lot of Jacob in us. God has to disable us, pick us up, and put us in the wagon. God help us to recognize the wagons when they come. When we come into the house of God, we ought to be excited. Because in a church service, there's wagons galore. I mean, there's a wagon train to transport us in the Lord's presence. And oh, how sad. When God's people come into the house of God, the wagons are lined up and they walk out, not paying any attention to all the wagons that God has sent. You have a bad day. We all have them. And at the end of the day, if we'll just take time and settle down and be honest and review the day, I promise you, you will see God sent a wagon here. God sent a wagon here. God sent a wagon here. And I paid no attention. He's always sending those wagons. God help us to recognize difficulties and trials, not as obstacles, but as wagons sent by our Joseph to us. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us verse 7.